Okay, just so you know a little bit more about who's talking, I'm going to give you a little background on how I became a business person. I was actually, I attended Texas Tech University. In my undergraduate work, I've got my master's degree at the University of North Texas. Don't write that down. That's not important. Okay? Don't write any of this personal stuff down. But I got my master's degree in public school administration from the University of North Texas. While I was a coach and a teacher, I went 5 summers in a row to graduate school to get my graduate degree in between school sessions. Why did I do that? To take care of my family. When you're a teacher, if you have a higher education degree, you get a raise. They give you a stipend for that. I did it for that reason, thinking maybe one of these days I might get tired of coaching and teaching and want to get into administration. As I went along, I found out after 7 years of being a teacher and a coach that the opportunities in that field weren't there financially for me to take care of my family and do other things in my life that I wanted to do. So I had to make a decision. Either move up in that field, try to become like, instead of a high school coach, become a college coach, be a head coach, move up in the field that way, or change professions. One thing I like about being a business person, I don't have to hold anybody else responsibility for my success but me. And if I build my business with the right foundation, with trust and honesty and hard work, I knew I could be a success because I was successful as a teacher and a coach in that field as well, but I didn't get rewarded from it. In that profession, you get paid according to the number of years you've been doing the job. You get raises according to how long you've been there. I found that there were people there not working as many hours as I was. They weren't volunteering for extracurricular activities like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, working after hours with the students and the athletes and the kids. They were just there. They weren't the best coaches, they weren't the best teachers, and yet they were making more money than I was because they had been there longer than I was. That ate at me. That bothered me. So I figured out finally I was in the wrong profession. I needed to change. Even though I love the kids, I love teaching, and I love coaching. That's why I'm here. I love to teach. I want to be here with you guys this morning, and hopefully some of the things I say this morning will be important to you down the line. Hopefully you'll remember some of it. I have brought samples I'm going to leave with Miss Long for her to make copies. If you want copies of any of this stuff I'm going to be talking about, she's going to have it. Hopefully you'll ask for some of it. And she can get you copies of it. Is that right? Okay. In talking about hard work and what it takes to be successful in any field you endeavor to go in, how many of you are actually going to go into, this is a business math course, right? How many of you plan on going into the business field someday? How many of you plan on being self-employed someday? Okay. I highly suggest that you strongly consider being your own boss. Again, remember what I said earlier? I have nobody to blame for my success or failure but myself. If you've got that kind of motivation, be your own boss. However, we're going to talk about money and what it talks about money and what it talks about being successful, being a Christian in your business life. We're going to talk about even if you work for someone else, work as if you're doing your job for the Lord. Do your best at any position you have, wherever, whether for yourself or someone else. So I'm going to start out with a guy named Kimmins Wilson. He's a motivational person for me. I read a book about his life. I keep part of what I learned in that book behind my desk, and I refer to it weekly. Kimmins Wilson came from just a middle-class family, grew up working hard. Ross Perot, for example, he started out his work career throwing newspapers. ended up establishing a company called EDS, which eventually he sold for billions of dollars. He's one of the richest men in the United States. Kimmins Wilson, same background, just worked hard, threw papers, got any kind of jobs he could. Eventually, he started selling ice machines to like Dairy Queens, you know, hamburger places and stuff. There was a new type of ice machine, and he became their salesman, was the best salesman they had. Decided, I don't have to do this for someone else, I can do it for myself. So he started his own company, selling ice machines. Traveled all over the country and realized with our new interstate highway system, because he's old now, so we're talking back in the 50s, with the new interstate highway system, there was no place for him to stay as he traveled around selling his ice machines, so he came up with the idea, what if we established inns all along the interstate system for people to stay in? He had some background in construction also. He had constructed houses, those kinds of things. He started Holiday Inn, all because as he worked in his life, he was always looking for new opportunities. So Kimmins Wilson started the Holiday Inn hotel chain. Now, the best part of his book is called Kimmins Wilson's 20 Tips for Success. And it's kind of weird. You wonder, well, this is a math class. You're not talking about math-related subject. Yeah, I am. Yes, I am. He had to calculate risks. He had to calculate the rewards that he would get out of doing the different things. And we'll get into budgeting, that kind of thing, here in just a little bit, not a lot. But the number one thing on his list, listen to this, guys. It's funny, yet it's true. Most things that have some humor to them have truth to them also. So his 20 tips for success, work only half a day. Doesn't seem right, does it? It makes no difference which half. It can be the first 12 hours or the second 12 hours. Okay? And work is the master key that opens the door to all opportunities. No job is too hard as long as you're smart enough to find someone else to do it for you. You're self-employed, you have people to help you. Another one of my favorite ones, don't be afraid of taking a chance. Remember that a broken watch is exactly right at least twice every 24 hours. This is, again, a good one. I'm not going to read all of them. There are two ways to get to the top of an oak tree. Listen to this. One way is to sit on an acorn and wait. The other way is to climb it. But the very last one, he ends up, this is a man of God. He says, believe in God and obey the Ten Commandments. Guys, he built his company and he built his success on a good base. He built his company on God's Word. Now, my guess is he understood the Ten Commandments very well. And as you go about your life, whatever endeavor you take on, just remember one thing, that all the answers to everything you need in business, in your family, your marriage, one of these days if you get married, the answers are in here. The answers to success are in here. Now, you don't know what kind of business I do. She didn't tell you. You don't know if I'm successful at it or not. All I can do is stand up here and tell you I've been very successful at it. But that's not what was important to me. What was important is to having time with my family, being responsible for myself, and being able to share what I have with others. Guys, I think if you'll use some of those as your premises, realizing that as God gifts you with the skills that you have as a student, or he skills you with your ability to speak, your ability to communicate, if you'll take that and use it for him, he'll reward you. Now, I'm getting off a little bit, but will he reward you financially? Maybe. What he may do is use those skills that you're allowing him to use on his behalf and make them better. He'll also give you opportunities to use them. So sharing your success is not just talking about money or math or anything else. It's talking about sharing God with other people by the way you live your life and the things you do in your business, things you do in your personal life, and in the future. So we're talking about math, but Ms. Long also asked me to talk about money and how it's treated in the Bible. One of the things I really love about the computer age is there's very few things I love about it because I'm an old school guy and I do most stuff by hand. I don't like getting on a computer. But it has a wealth of information that you can use for the positive if you'll do it. So I went and I said money in the Bible in Google. I'm surprised I could even get to it, but I did. I just typed in Google somewhere and it came up, so I don't know how or why. But money came up. So we're going to have verse after verse after verse after verse after verse of you and your success in the future of making money and how you can use that money the way God is asking you to. And if you do that, He'll reward you. So these sheets, there's like six of them or five, full with really good advice about money in the Bible. All of you know this saying, the root, money is the root, the love of money is the root of all evil. There's different versions. I almost messed it up. It's not money itself. Money can do really good things. It's the love of it that gets you in trouble. It's like the story where seeds are being planted, and there's different types of ground that the seeds are planted in. Mark, it talks about this, and there's seeds that planted on good soil. There's seeds that are planted on thorny soil. Now, what do the thorns represent in Mark when it's talking about planting seeds on thorny ground? Huh? Stress and worry about what?
Life.
Money. Outside worldly effects on your life can pull you away from doing God's work, having seeds planted in you that will produce fruit. So you don't want to place your emphasis in life on what you have. Also in the Bible, there's many places where it talks about being happy in any situation God puts you in. Whether you're poor, in between, or rich. Now, being happy, if you're wealthy, doesn't necessarily mean the money is what's making you happy. It's how you're living your life. It's what's going to make you happy. I know a lot of very wealthy people that are very sad in a very bad way. Just look to Hollywood anytime you want to, and all the broken marriages, all the drug use, and everything else. Those people are multimillionaires. A large percentage of them are very unhappy because they built their whole life on what they have instead of who they are. Who you are is much more important than what you have. Okay. So remember Kimmins Wilson? He based his whole business, established a very successful business on the Bible, the Ten Commandments. You can find a lot of examples like that in the business world if you take time to look. One thing you need to do, you need to read God's Word, and you constantly need to study and read to improve yourself. You can learn a lot from other people if you'll take the time to do it. There's all kinds of motivation out there. I brought a motivational page. Also, I have it back behind my desk. This is actually a guy that's in the same business that I am in. It's 7 positive affirmations of a champion. So there's just attitudes that you need to have in business. This right here is the Optimist Creed. Get a copy of this. Keep these handy. Read them every now and then. Think about them along with your Bible study. Okay, I changed professions to make more money. I became a businessman. I just have 4 employees, need 5. So pretty soon, probably in September, I'm actually putting the math together on my expenses, my income, and profit. And then I'm determining what my sales goals need to be. And I'm writing them down, and I'm thinking about them, and I'm praying about them. What do I need to do on expenses, income, profit, sales goals, marketing, advertising? So I'm having to write all that down, and I'm having to think about it. What do I need to do to come up with the income for the new employee? So you can't always think when hiring somebody that it's just an expense. It's a business investment. As I hire a new employee, I'm investing back into my business. I'm going to have another person there to help me do what I do. So I take my gross expenses at this point, my income, what I expect it to be. I'm in sales. My income can vary $5,000 or $6,000 easily a month. Easily. Then I take my expenses, income, get my profit, estimate what that profit's going to be, what I need to sell additional to what I'm doing now. If I add a sales, another person, how much more marketing I maybe need to do, advertising I may need to do to cause the income to go up. So to handle the expenses of an added employee, to keep my profit margin where I need it to be for my family and me. Okay? It's that simple. Exxon, Mobil, IBM, whoever makes those suckers and gum back there, who made your notebook, the paper you're writing on, the pen or pencil you're holding in your hand, it's basic math. But there's all kinds of factors that come into play. It doesn't matter what size corporation you are. Okay. Now, there's other part in income. There's different kinds of income. There's my actual income from my business, and there's investment income, earnings from things that I've set aside for the future. So you've got a lot of different kinds of income and expenses. So my expenses, gross income, and then you've got net income, which is profit, okay? Sometimes you have to leverage. I have committed myself to an advertising and marketing plan this year where I am actually going to have to borrow money to make it complete, to make it happen. I'm going to leverage myself, my business, against the potential of future profit. So the business math all comes into play. You know, it's easy. I got to take percentages and what percentage I make off different products and apply those and try to establish my sales goals and those kinds of things. But that's called leveraging. I'm going to leverage or borrow is one way to leverage against future profit. Okay. As you do the math for a business, there's a lot of things you have to consider. Make sure I don't skip anything that I wrote down. I've already got marketing and advertising. Now, can somebody tell me what the difference between marketing and advertising is? Somebody be brave. That's right. It's establishing who you're selling to. To make sure once you do it and how you're going to approach that particular set of people or set of markets. It may not be markets. You may be selling to other companies or whatever it is. So you've got to establish who you're going to sell to, what do they need, and what is the best way to get it to them. And then advertising is one of the ways you do that. Actually, doing what I'm doing today is a type of marketing and advertising combined, because I've got my name up here. I'm a self-employed businessman. I'm marketing letting you see who I am, and then putting myself out in front of there. So marketing, advertising. The advertising is billboards, newspaper ads, TV ads. But the marketing was done prior to those ads being put in the marketplace. Okay. They got to decide who they want to reach, what their product's good for, and who it's good for. Okay. So in setting up an office or a business, you've got marketing and advertising. You've got physical needs for your office. Where are you going to be? What kind of building? What does the office need? How many phones? What type of phones? What type of desk? File cabinets? How do you want it to look? What kind of carpet? What kind of flooring? Walls? What do you want it to look like? Staffing? Employees? You've got different kinds. You got marketing people. You got sales people. You have many different types of staffing to look at. You got to pay insurance. You got to have the building insured. You got to have workers' comp insurance on your employees. You got to factor in all those things. Taxes and fees. Just about every business, well, all of us have to pay taxes on income. But there's also licensing fees if you're in a type of business that the state regulates. There's all kinds of fees and charges that have to be paid. You got to get licensed in a lot of businesses. If you become self-employed, you got to pay for licenses and training and those kinds of things. You have to have continuous education. Did you realize doctors, lawyers, insurance agents have to continuously go to class and take so many hours every year to keep their licenses intact? That's an expense. It's an expense in more way than one. Not only do you have to pay for the courses, it's a time expense. That's probably the biggest expense of the continuous education is the time you have to take away from your business. Professional organization memberships. Why do you want to belong to a professional organization? Because it provides educational opportunities so you can become better. It also provides ideas that maybe will help you be better in the business that you're in. You've got supplies for your office, which is part of the physical needs. Travel. I travel to go to seminars. I travel to speak with other people in my field of business. So you've got travel involved. And if you're in the right kind of business, you have to travel to meet your clients, those kinds of things. Okay. So enough about that. That's the math. That's a lot of the math that comes into running a business. I want to do a little thing here. I brought gum and two different types of gum and suckers back there. Whoever answers this question can get five of each of those. I want everybody else to limit it to three or four. Not a big deal. It's a very small thing. Rule of 72. So we're going now to investing, to give you a hint of what that's about. A lot of business people do invest part of their profit so they can have unearned income coming in to help with their business as well, not just the earned income. Do you know the difference? So earned income, unearned income. Earned income is what you get for your commissions or the price of your product. It's the profit you make off of it. Unearned income is profit you're making off investing that profit. It's money you didn't actually have to do anything to get. It's just coming from a source other than your actual work. What's the rule of 72? Anybody know that? Please make this, put in your notes. Remember this. It can be very important to you someday. Anybody brave enough that might think you know? Take a guess. It has to do with investing. Okay. Yeah. Well, it used to be the top tax bracket under Jimmy Carter when he was president. So it killed business in the United States when he did that. But, so, no, that's not it. I don't see an eraser, but forget that. Oh, it's that thing. I knew exactly what you were talking about when you said it was the funny-looking thing. Okay, the rule of 72 is how long it takes your money to double. You can either divide the 72 by number of years that you want it to double, or the percentage rate you will expect to earn. Okay, I'm going to retire probably in about 9 years is my goal. 5 to 9 years, I'm going to retire. It looks that way. So the money I've got invested for my future, for retirement, I want it. I would love it to double in 9 years. What interest rate would I have to earn for the money I've got invested right now to be worth twice as much in 9 years? What percentage rate would I have to earn? I want it to double in 9 years. Divide that into 72. What's your answer? 8. So if I could get 8% return on the money I've already got invested, I will have double what I have now in just 9 years. You can do it either way. You can divide the years into the 72, or you can divide the interest rate into 72. It'll tell you how many years it would take your money to double. So if I earn 10% interest, how many years would it take my money to double? 7.2 years. It's called the rule of 72. It doesn't fail. It's infallible. It's one of those math rules that just is, there's a lot of true math rules. You can have faith in them. You can trust them. It won't lie to you. So there's, and I brought a whole sheet of little math rules. Again, if you want these, it's the 9 times quickie, the 4 times quickie, the 11 times rule, number one. It's some little math rules that you guys can use if you want them. They're here. I brought measurement conversions. These math rules won't lie to you. They're accurate. If you want to convert centimeters, feet, you know, weights, any of that. Brought those for you too, because this is a math class. I brought an amortization schedule. One of these days you guys are going to buy a car and get a loan, or get a house and have a loan on your house. What this amortization schedule shows you is different amounts of money that you might borrow at different lengths of years at two different interest rates. I printed off two different interest rate sheets so you can see how the interest rate affects the payment you would have to make on different amounts of money you might borrow. It goes all the way from 5 years to 30 years, all the way from $50 up to $100,000. As a business person, someday you're going to probably borrow some money. When I started my business, I borrowed money for 3 years. Just my secretary, the lady, she wasn't the secretary, customer service rep, was making more than I was. I was borrowing money to live on. I was leveraging my business. I had faith enough in myself. I borrowed money, and I was living off borrowed money. And I paid her a salary to be in the office because, why did I want to hire somebody to be in the office? What did I need to do? I need to be out selling, marketing, advertising. I actually went door to door and knocked on doors. So I had to have somebody in the office as those people started calling to answer the phone and be there. So I leveraged that. I borrowed money to do that. It took me 7 years to pay the loan off, but it paid off. It was fine. So that's another example of leveraging. I did have to borrow money. Most business people, especially self-employed people, borrow money to get started. But like Kimmins Wilson, if you work hard enough and you build your business on a good foundation. Remember I said there are math formulas that will not lie to you. The rule of 72 will not lie to you. Let me tell you what else won't lie to you. This won't lie to you. The answers to all these businesses, starting a business, how to treat your money in a business, how to treat other people in your business. It's here. We've got the perfect example of to follow, which is Jesus. You follow his life. See who he went to. See who he cared for. See how he taught. He taught the disciples. He was a teacher. He cared for people. He sacrificed. Also in the Bible it says he who would be first must first be last. What does that mean? Somebody be brave. What does that mean? Who would be first must first be last. Got an idea? Okay. Did you hear that? Be a servant first. Take care of others' needs. Think outside yourself. Trust in what you've learned. Trust in who you've learned it from. See to others' needs, and you're going to be okay. Okay, so establish yourself. I'm going to give you a little example here of math and how it can apply to you. One thing that you do as you leverage your business, or if you borrowed money, in borrowing money, I have to make payments to that. And what happens to the money I have to put into my business, it has a time value. So if I borrow money and I don't negotiate a good interest rate on the loan, I'm losing value of that money that if I had gotten a better interest rate on my loan, so you've got to be careful. If I had not taken the time to expand on this sheet, what I'm going to show you is on a $100,000 loan, which, by the way, $100,000 is not out of line to borrow to start a business. Of course, you've got to have the credit to do that. So, guys, don't forget, during your lifetime, one of the most important things, I know I'm off task, but I'll get back on this in just a second. The only way I was able to get the loans that I got and what I needed for my business is I guarded my credit. Now, God tells you about that. Neither a borrower or lender be. Sometimes you have to, and He understands that. There is a course you can take. It's called Crown Ministries. Crown Ministries will walk you through the Bible on being careful about debt. Matter of fact, it tells you, unless it's absolutely necessary, don't go into debt for anything. You be your own banker. You set the money aside. Pay cash for it. Let your money work for you with that unearned profit that I was talking about, having invested. For example, you know, put it in a savings account. Put it, you know, if you're careful, you can make money investing in mutual funds, stock market, those kinds of things. You have to be careful, because you can also lose your money in some of those things too. It talks about that. It's called Crown Ministries. It's a financial workshop. Guys, if there's nothing else you do right after you get married, and again, y'all are, what grade? How many of you are freshmen? Most of you? So it's way down the line. I keep talking about stuff that's happened to me, so okay? If and when you ever get married, sign up for a Crown Ministries course and go through it. It will be the best thing you've ever done. It's called Crown Ministries. You can pull it up on the internet if you want it. Don't wait. I'm telling you, go to it now. Because what you'll learn in it now, if you start applying what you learn in that course, you'll be in so much better shape than if you don't, because of what you'll learn in there. Okay, so this is an easy thing. If I borrow money, $100,000, I think one of these is 7.25% interest. I actually cut the interest off. I didn't realize that when I copied this. And I think the other one's at 7.5%. So it's not a big difference in the percentage rate. But there's $108 a year difference in the interest that I would pay. So this loan, it doesn't sound like a lot. But if I did a 35-year loan on a home, for example, and there was $108 a year difference, I've lost, if I've done this loan instead of that one, I've lost the time value of this money. So anything you decide to spend your money on, whether it be a video game, a night out eating pizza or whatever, you've lost the time value of that money. It's money that you could have used in another way, that if you left it alone or invested it or put it in a savings account, let it earn interest, it's going to earn you unearned income. The more of the unearned income you can start building up, the better your life's going to be in the future. Now, over a 35-year period, just a difference of $108 a year, in 35 years, that's going to be worth over $12,000. Had you just set that money aside, negotiated a better interest rate on your loan, on your home or whatever it is, and set that money aside, you're going to earn over almost $13,000 more over a 35-year period. Big deal. Well, it's a big deal because multiply that times 10. $90 a month. Whatever. What's 1080 divided by 12? You got it? I see a calculator over here. Go ahead. 1080 divided by 12. Okay. I just guessed, but it sounded like 90 would be that. Okay. So $90 a month invested at just the difference between this interest rate and this interest rate. That's not even invested. That's just the difference in the payment. Okay. So if the difference is $1,000 a year, you're going to have $127,000 instead of $12,000 in 35 years. Okay. Money that you can take now, if you took this $12,757 and you invested it over 35 years and you earned 8% on that, so you've taken the time value of that money, you've invested it over that 35 years at 8%, you're going to have a whole lot more than $12,757. That's just the difference between the payment for the 35-year period. Okay? So, keep that in mind. I believe that's right. I may have applied an interest to it. I didn't write off the right page, but print off the right page. But time value, keep that in mind. So in making decisions about how to use your returns, your profits, guys, the money you spend, you're going to lose the time value of that money if you spend it on something that's not going to eventually earn you something. How many things have you bought in the past year that is stuff that you no longer have? You just threw it away because it became outdated. It became no longer of use to you. You no longer wanted to use it. You gave it away to somebody else. It is something you could have done without. Okay. So amortization chart up here on those payments, the time value of money. There's also a formula here for compound interest. Okay, let's talk about that real quick. As you realize the time value of money and you start investing or doing whatever you're going to do with it, remembering the rule of 72, your money doubles. In 10 years, you just have to earn 7.2% interest. The stock market, in the history of the stock market, has averaged a little over 8% since 1927. Okay, to give you an example. So you've got two types of interest earnings. You've got simple interest and compound interest. By the way, this is not only used in earnings, it's used in your loan calculations and some of the loans that you might get or money you might borrow. Okay, so compound interest is going to compound annually sometimes, semi-annually, quarterly, monthly. Now, if you're investing or you're putting money in a savings account, which one of these would be best for you? If you want your earnings to compound, which one of these would be better if you're the one putting the money aside and investing it or saving it monthly? If you can find an account that's going to compound the interest monthly, you're going to come out ahead in the long run, especially over a long time period. If you're borrowing money, how do you want the interest to accrue? Annually. So one way to enhance the time value of your money in doing loans, you need to look at the different opportunities you have to either borrow and invest and see where they fall in this. It works both ways, whether it's borrowing the money or saving the money or investing it. Simple interest is, let's say you borrow $1,000, they're going to give you back 8% over the time of the loan. Or you're going to earn 8%. What's 8% of $1,000? Okay. All right. So, anyway, simple interest, compound interest, this is the best. Except for loans, this would be the best in some cases, depending on the interest rate. If they're using simple interest, they're going to charge you a higher interest rate. That's the way it boils down. Okay. All this involves what? What class are you in? Math. Percentages. Got to be able to take the number of years, the compounding, how it's going to compound for you, what it's going to do. Let me talk about some of the verses that are in here in my Bible. I've got a couple of them that I'm not going to read to you for a long time, but there's a couple of them I wanted to read. If you got a Bible, go to Acts chapter 4, verses 32 through 37. As you work to be successful, as you work to take care of your family, as you live your life, your purpose is not to just be successful financially. Your purpose is to be successful as a person. Use Jesus as your guide. Did he live his life worried about where his next meal came from or how he was dressed or how many friends he had, how impressed people were with him? No. He lived his life constantly doing what? Helping others. So in here, believers share their possessions. All the believers were in one heart and mind. This is verse 32. I'm going to go 32 through 37. No one claimed that any of his possessions was his own. Whose possessions is it really? Who is all this money, earnings I'm getting? Where is it coming from? It's coming from God. It's coming from the abilities he gave me. Okay? But they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and much grace was upon them all. They testified to Jesus' resurrection, that he was the risen Savior. There were no needy persons among them, for from time to time, those who owned lands or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales, and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone as he had need. So actually, I'll stop there at 35. Then in 2 Timothy chapter 5, verses 7 and 8, give the people these instructions too, so that no one may be open to blame. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Whose needs is it telling you to take care of? Yours? Is it for you to buy just what you want with the money that you earned? Whose needs is God telling you to take care of? Others. Your family members. Okay, let's go to chapter 6, verses 5 and 6. In constant friction between men of corrupt mind who have been robbed of the truth and who think that godliness is a means to financial gain. So there's friction among the brotherhood because some of them have determined that their godliness, in other words, the way they portray themselves and their belief in God, is a way to riches. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Oh, I missed a verse. Let's see, let's go back to 6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we had food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men in ruin and destruction. Now, what I don't want you to get the impression is that I think all rich people are evil and all people are, that have money are going to fall into temptation. What is it telling you? It's telling you to be aware that if your point is just to become rich, if your love in life is the having things from this world and having wealth from this world, you're focused on the wrong thing and you're going to be led down a wrong path. We are fallible. The reason Jesus had to come to earth is because we don't always make the right decisions. We fall short. We have desires that are ungodly. We have desires that lead us down the wrong path. So he will constantly remind you, if you'll study God's word, he'll constantly remind you to be careful of that. Satan is stronger than any one of us. You've got to remember, he's a celestial being. He's an angel. He has more authority over you than what you realize. You cannot defeat him. You cannot defeat your desires for riches and the things of this world. Jesus and God can do it for you if you allow him to. And if you build your business on the right basis, you understand all the parts that go into play, the things that you have to be knowledgeable about, the things you have to be aware of, you're going to be okay. You know, I did not highlight these. You ever seen that bumper sticker, whoever has the most toys when he dies wins? I've seen that bumper sticker. It was real popular back in the 80s. If you think about what was happening in the 80s, it was real easy to make a profit with very low-level investment risks. I don't know if this will make any sense to you guys, and it probably will to some of you. Home mortgage rates in the 80s, was 15 to 17%. That's really high. But what it also meant is savings rates in banks and real safe types of investments were 8 to 9% on real unrisky investments. Remember what I told you about the rule of 72? If you earned 8%, your money doubled. Divide 8 into 72 every 9 years. Okay, so people were able to get out of the stock market, not worry about a lot of the more risky types of investments, and put money into savings accounts and still earn 7, 8, 6%, have a good return on their money. People became very, even though home mortgage rates were that high, a lot of people were still able to buy houses, but then it changed. Interest rates started dropping, business started picking up, people were getting jobs. And then the 90s hit. So these bumper stickers probably were in the early 90s, actually, now that I think about it. Stock market started booming. It was like falling off a log to make a profit in the stock market. I constantly told people, young clients of mine, people in their 30s, both employed, no children. They were making $60,000, $70,000 each. So their combined income between the two of them were 100 plus. And I'm talking about the early 90s. So no expenses, no worries. They all were just worried about themselves. And they would come into my office and say, why would I invest in a low-risk thing at this point, probably earning 4 to 6%, when I invest in the stock market and earn 20 30, even 40 plus percent return. Well, there's an old saying, what goes up must come down. See, I lived longer than they did. This Bible's been around a lot longer than you do. So the advice I gave them is that go ahead, the money you can afford to lose right now in the 90s, when the stock market was doing this kind of a return, the money you can afford to lose, put here. The money you want to actually have for your future, put it into some kind of savings tool that's guaranteed. Have a balance in your investments. It's called diversification. You want to diversify your investment. Well, the reason I brought all that up, it says he has the most toys, that bumper sticker says, wins. In other words, just don't worry about it. Man, we're earning. These are 20, 30-year-old people who have never been through a down stock market. They were too young in the 80s to realize when the interest rates were this high and the stock market was losing 20, 30, 40% a year. Businesses were going out of business. People were getting laid off, and then it turned around. Now, what caused the boom of the economy in the 90s? Somebody be brave. What do you have right there in front of you? Computers. Computers, internet companies, the info world, all that was established in the 90s. That's where the boom of that economy was based on, and a lot of those companies weren't based on good ground. They were just based on people being dumb enough to invest in them and give them money. They didn't have a basis for what they were doing. As those companies started failing, the stocks started dropping. Companies who were investing those had to get their money out if they could and try to find other places to invest it. You got to make your stockholders happy, that kind of thing. So it just crashed in the middle 90s, the stock market. Towards the end of the 90s and the early 2000s, stock market had another downtime. I don't know how many of these young couples that were in their 20s and 30s that were making $100,000 a year and they were investing all their free money that they had other than what they were using to buy boats and houses and swimming pools and fancy clothes and going on vacations. But I don't know how much of they had it left after the stock market dropped 25, 30, 40% instead of going up. Hopefully they listened to me and put some of it. They didn't with me, most of them, because they thought I was just a dumb guy. That I was just an old guy. I didn't know what I was talking about. I had lived through the down stock market. I knew it was going to happen again. Guys, this is what investing looks like. How many of you like roller coasters? I love roller coasters. I'm a chance taker, but that's what the stock market looks like. Over the length of ever since it's been around, since 1927, Yeah. Now, I can show you, it didn't work, did it? If you'd invested a dollar in 1927, that dollar would be worth over $100,000 right now had you invested in small cap companies, small capitalized companies, and left it alone. From 1927 to 9, that $1 would be worth over $100,000. Why? Well, because there were a lot of these. Even though there were some of these, it averaged from that time up to a certain point 10% a year. So there were times when those companies returned 40, 50% profit, and sometimes they lost 20%. You know, so it just depends. So these people were looking for the short-term gain. They weren't looking for the long haul. They were looking for short-term gain on their money, and it bit them. Only invest in risky investments what you can afford to lose. Anything else you want to keep for the future, make sure you're putting it somewhere safe. You won't get as good a return, but you also don't have a chance to lose it. So, invest for the long haul, guys. Invest your time. Invest your education. Invest your daily life. Don't forget the time value of money, guys. Your life, your daily life has value. Invest it wisely. Learn all you can. Read all you can. Get advice from people who have been there and already done it. Believe them. Trust them. But the best place, he never lied. Everything He's promised you will come to pass and has come to pass. Everything He promised Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, all the promises He kept. So, that's the end of what I'm going to talk about today. What I do want to know is if anybody has any questions about any of this stuff, about a business, maybe some of the decisions I had to make transferring from being an employee of a governmental entity, which is a school district, to being totally self-employed. Guys, it was like day and night. I had to go from, I knew where I needed to be every day. I knew what my lesson plan was because they made me do it ahead of time. I knew what my income was going to be every month. Real easy for budgeting. I just couldn't budget for much. Okay. So, anybody got any questions about any of that? Yes, sir.
As far as savings goes, like let's say you get a paycheck and you take out your 10% of that, how much should you take out and put in savings?
Out of your income, you mean?
Out of every check.
Okay. How much should you save? Depends on what your goals are. Okay? Now, I want to say one other thing. Don't lock God into 10% of your income on tithing or giving. Okay? That's something that it bothers me a little bit, is that tithing is a concept of giving back to God what is already His. 10% is a good starting point. You're just going to give Him 10% of your time? You're only going to give Him 10% of your talent? Are you going to use 100% of your day on a daily basis, tithing your time and talent to God and what you do? The type of work you do, the people that work with you, are you going to put time into them? Are you going to put your talent into them? If so, how much? Your employer. I promise you one thing, you give your employer only 10% of your talent and time, you won't be his employee much longer. So don't limit yourself now. So you sit down and think about what your goals are. You know about the time value of money now. You know how to determine what interest rates you might earn and what kind of risk you're willing to take, whether you want to do a safe investment like a savings account or an annuity or something like that, or whether you want to invest in the stock market. Hopefully get the 10, 20. I mean, there's some mutual funds out there right now that I sell that are earning 20, 27%. But I will tell you, 3 years ago, they were losing 20, 27%. So what are your goals? Is it money you can afford to lose, or is it money you need to have to do a certain thing? So sit down, what's your goals? You want to have a house for your family someday? You want to buy a certain type of car? You know, but when you buy the more expensive car instead of the cheaper one, what are you going to lose? You're going to lose the time value of that money had you invested the difference and saved it. Okay, so make these decisions and use your time and value on. The rule of thumb on saving money is 10% of your income. Crown Ministries will tell you start out with at least 10%. Okay, on your savings. So take your income, subtract what you're going to give back financially to God, subtract what you need to set aside for your future to have a safety net. You might not always be employed. We might not have another downtime. If you're somebody's employee, they have to lay people off. You could be one of those people. So have a safety net to fall back on, savings. Okay, a lot of people tell you it needs to be 6 months to a year of your earning income, your earning abilities for any 1 year. It needs to be at least a minimum of 6 months of that. So until you've saved, put aside at least 6 months of your potential earnings, be very careful on what you spend your money on, because you've got the time value of that money, what you didn't spend. Does that answer your question? Kind of, sort of. What else? Guys, don't be afraid to step out. Pray about it. Hand it over to God. If you need to change what you're doing to take care of yourself better, to take care of your family better, to be a better person or whatever, step out in faith. Just make sure you base it on sound principles. Do all the math. Make the calculations. And then trust. Have trust in God that it'll work out. Thank you, guys. You guys have been great. Nobody fell asleep. I think last time I came, somebody went to sleep on me. I'm done.